Hey everyone, this is Brian from the Tennis IQ Podcast. Josh and I hope that you are enjoying the content and discussions that we put out week after week. If you'd like to support the podcast and help us to continue to produce quality episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Currently, we have three tiers of support: the fan level at $3 per month, the supporter level at $7 per month, and the champion level at $20 per month. Benefits of joining the Tennis IQ podcast community include episode transcripts, participation in book club discussions, and access to monthly masterclasses with me and Josh. For more on these benefits of support, head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Thank you so much. And now, on to the show.
Welcome to the Tennis IQ Podcast. I'm Josh Berger.
And I'm Brian Lomax. And today, Josh and I are going to discuss a quote from a book that I found very thought-provoking, and it also made me think a lot about some of the things going on with the players that I'm working with currently. And when Josh and I were discussing this, he noted some of the same sort of things happening with some of his clients. And so we're hoping that this will all also resonate with all of you as listeners and players and coaches, and maybe give you a sort of a different take on this. So the quote is from a book called Achieving Peak Performance in Tennis, A Practical Guide to Developing Your Mind and Energy System for Winning by Helen Ems. Read this book a few months ago. Would definitely recommend it. I don't think it was as good as Mindset by Jackie Reardon, but it's a good book. And it definitely has some very thought-provoking things in it. And one of them was this. And so the quote that really kind of jumped out at me and made me think about situations with some of the people that I'm working with was this. One of the difficulties for any player is continuing to believe in yourself even when you aren't getting the results you want. And so what that made me think about, Josh, was that many of the players that I'm working with are doing a lot of the right things in their training, in their preparation. Practice matches are going the way they want to. Diet, sleep, exercise, all of that really seems to be on point. But consistent results are not, they don't feel that yet. And obviously tennis is a sport in which there's a lot of losing, whether that be points, games, sets, matches. And it can feel difficult, I think, in when you feel like you are doing all these great things and then the results aren't there. You know, and one of the things that I was thinking about was how you, in one of our previous episodes, were talking about winning and other type of results as sort of lagging measures of what may be happening. And it seems one of the things that makes it difficult to believe in yourself is you're doing all this great work, yet it's not coming out. And there's like this gap, perhaps, between the onset of the right behaviors and when you actually may start to realize those results, which do lag. But like the uncertainty there is, well, what's the gap? You don't know. And I think it's in that space maybe where we begin to question ourselves. Maybe that's where the lack of belief may come. So I'll stop there, Josh, just to get kind of your initial thoughts, and we can dive in a little bit more into this, because I'm sure a lot of people feel this as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a common challenge, and I definitely see it in certain athletes that I work with, and I think it's I don't know if I want to say a universal challenge, but I think a lot of people go through that where they're working hard, their process is in place, as you said, maybe it's their diet, their fitness, you know, different pieces of their game, but they're not necessarily seeing the results. And I think sometimes that, you know, I think there can be different reasons for that. And I think sometimes it really is that they're doing everything right, but it just takes a little bit longer. And Yeah, I think it was actually a recent episode, our Wimbledon recap episode, where we were talking about Chris Eubanks as an example, where I think for a long time people looked at his game and his serve, his ground strokes, his ability to generate winners in different parts of the court, and they said, this guy's has an awesome game. He should be, or he could be, a top player. But he was at the time, somewhere between 150 and 220 in the world for a number of years, I think for around 5 years. And then all of a sudden, this year, 2023, he broke through into the top 100, won his first ATP title, quarterfinals at Wimbledon, is now a top 30 player in the world. And, I think sometimes there is that lag, there is that period of time where, somebody, either the athlete themselves or some of the people around them can see the ability, can see the level that they're able to generate, but somehow the performance or the results hasn't quite caught up to that. And yeah, when I think this idea of sort of a lagging measure or lagging indicator is brought up in Atomic Habits, where James Clear talks about a couple of different a couple of different measurements, things like, fitness levels or, even something like your finances, and talking about how, your fitness levels are a lagging indicator of your diet and your exercise, right? So if you start an exercise program, or maybe you make changes to your diet, day one or even maybe day three, you're not going to really see drastic changes. But, fast forward weeks and months and years, and you can see those changes. But, in the moment of making that change on that first day, that second day, nothing really has changed. And the same is true of, your finances, right? Your bank account. I think he makes the point that's, something like your bank account or your net worth is sort of a lagging indicator of your, financial habits and different other habits that you've put in place. And I think it's definitely true here when we think about tennis results, whether that's a ranking, whether that's a UTR rating, whether that's beating a certain level of player, that, sometimes, and I think it's often the case that, results like that are a lagging indicator of our level. So we get to that level and we expect that those results are going to come at the same time. And sometimes they do, but I think oftentimes it is a lagging indicator. And there is that gap between, when we reach this certain level with our games and when the results catch up or seem to catch up, maybe from an outsider's perspective. So, yeah, no, I'm glad that I like this topic that you suggested, and I think it really relates to a number of things that we've talked about in terms of, having a process, trusting that process, despite those ups and downs, and and also having some faith or some trust that, even if I'm not seeing maybe the results right now, if I'm putting in the work, if my process is there, if I'm seeing the improvements, the results will come. It just might, unfortunately, take a little longer than we'd like.
And we have to combat sort of our need for immediate gratification, which is very strong. It probably made stronger today with smartphones and apps and so forth than we've ever had it. And so I think that's a factor as well, because we do these right things and we want to see it. And whether that's winning in tennis or getting an optimal conditioning, yeah, the bank account, all of it, we would really prefer it to happen right now. And the unfortunate piece, as James Clear says, is that's not the way it works. When it came to sort of lag measures, it made me think of a book, and for those who are interested in business, a book called The Four Disciplines of Execution. Very similar, talking about how whatever your metrics are in business, those are lag measures. But what are your lead measures? What are the things that excuse me, lead to creating, success in, say, sales or customer conversions or whatever? Again, same in tennis. having a good sense of what are those great behaviors that I believe will lead to wins eventually. And as you said, Josh, that's knowing your process. And so when I thought a little bit more deeply about it, when we're talking about the right things, much of what we're talking about is before or after the performance. We could probably zoom in a little bit more on the actual performance and then ask the question, are we actually doing all the right things there? Now that, I think, would be a very fair question, because the difficulty with the performance is you're going up against an opponent. There are different stressors that come up there. You're playing someone who doesn't want you to play well. You both want to win. There's a lot going on there in this dynamic that's much more out of control than, say, your training and all these other things, but probably more within your control. So the question becomes, okay, yeah, we're doing all the right things off the court, maybe on the court practice, before, after. What about during? Can we look at that a little bit more? Because the stories that I hear are more about that part and how things are changing there. So for example, very simple scenario might be somebody's trying to close out a set and they stop doing the right things. They stop doing what led them to be in a position to close out a set. And so, yeah, I think it's worthwhile, like, all right, why? Why did you stop doing the right things? And I think there are a number of ways to look at that. And I think, as you know, mental performance coaches, we often look at sort of the idea of loss aversion, sort of the difference between playing not to lose versus playing to win, looking at the different emotional reactions to the stressor. Maybe we're nervous, maybe we're fearful. How can we change that, et cetera? But this quote really made me think about belief more. Could we examine belief? Like, look at this situation, not necessarily through those lenses, but through the lens of trust and belief, and apply that. Not that the other things are invalid, right? I think they're very valid ways of looking at it. But what if we looked at it through that way? Would that help? I'm just curious what you think.
Definitely. Definitely. And I think there's different ways to approach this. If we were sticking with that example where a player has been playing well and, you know, they're a game or two from winning the match, I think it's very common that, you know, that somebody moves away from what got them there and they start, you know, getting in their own head. And I think there's different ways to approach that, right? I mean, trying to look at the emotions, trying to think about what skills you can apply to that, skills or tools you can apply to that situation. Yeah, I think the trust and belief piece is key, right? It's like, okay, I trust that by doing what has gotten me to this point, that will continue to lead to positive results and you know, help me continue to win and ultimately get over the finish line. I think sometimes it happens with more aggressive players, and they're going for their shots. They're maybe hitting winners or forcing errors, and then all of a sudden they get to a tiebreaker. They're trying to serve for the match, and they stop going for it as much because of that loss aversion concept that you brought up. But I think, yeah, trying to really believe in your abilities, trust in your shots, and understand that you're not just playing for this one match. Obviously, in the moment, we want to win that match, but also this match is practice. And we've talked about this concept of, you know, everything being practice. Understanding that this is practice for the next time you're in the situation and the next time, and, you know, that you are trying to number one, be the best player you can be. And you're trying to build a game that you can apply to different sorts of situations. And you'll be in a situation like this in the future, and this is simply practice for that situation and for the next one. So understanding that, you know, that it's about a lot more than this one result, and you know, you want to be playing in a certain way and going for your shots. And ultimately, if that doesn't work on a, you know, on a particular day, then that hurts in the moment, but you're still doing the right thing in terms of setting yourself up for the future, because you're, you know, you're practicing playing in the way that you've determined is best. And I think also, you know, when we look at the pro level, whether it's, you know, somebody like Iga Swiatek or, you know, different players, Iga Swiatek, Alcaraz, I guess both of them come to mind being currently number one, but I can think about, you know, recent Grand Slam finals where, you know, the French Open final on Iga's side and Wimbledon final for Alcaraz. And with both of them, in those key moments, they continued going for their shots. When the match was on the line, when they really needed it, they continued going for it. They stuck with what got them there. In both of those finals, Iga's being three-setter, Alcaraz's being a five-setter, there were plenty of ups and downs. There were plenty of maybe moments of frustration, moments of doubt. Alcaraz lost that first set 6-1. You know, I think Iga had struggled in that second set and beginning of the third set in her final. And, you know, but they said, hey, this is how I play best. And this is the game I'm going to go with in those big moments. And, you know, and you know, they are both number one in the world. And, you know, I think that ultimately was, you know, for each of them was one of the key factors bringing them over the finish line and helping them win that match. The fact that they went for it at the end. Like I can think, you know, it was more recently that final game that where Alcaraz had to serve it out against Djokovic. I remember him coming up to the net, hitting winners. It's, you know, he didn't expect Djokovic to hand it to him or to just miss. He wasn't waiting for his opponent to miss. He went there and he took it rather than waiting for it. And he stuck with the game style that got him to that point. He trusted his abilities. He believed in himself and he went for it rather than waited for, you know, for something to be handed to him. He went out there and he took it.
I think Novak Djokovic is another good example of this. And I think if we were to paint a picture of like what we would want listeners to be able to do, it would be, I think, this. Know what your A game is. Work on that. Experiment with that. Experience that so that you can learn it. And then, very simplistically, try to play that on every single point, regardless of what the score is. Very often, it's the score that creates some sort of stressor in your mind that tricks you into thinking you need to do something different. Maybe being more aggressive or just be consistent, and it takes you out of the A game. And so it gets you to not trust your A game anymore, even though your A game is what delivers. And when you watch Novak Djokovic, I think he's an easy example, Josh, because he plays a relatively simple, disciplined game. Not doing a lot of complex things. Alcaraz, a little bit more complexity to him because of the number of drop shots, the number of inside-in forehands that he hits. You know, and so some of the decision-making around that is a little bit more complex, I'd say, than what Djokovic does. Djokovic, I think, is like the ultimate directionals player and almost never beats himself. As you pointed out, Alcaraz knew Djokovic would not hand him that last game. So he had to stick with who he was and play that game. And he did. And that's great. I think Alcaraz right now is the only player who has the self-belief in his A game to beat Djokovic. Djokovic is tremendously difficult to beat because he doesn't beat himself. He rarely loses a match. And that's why he wins so often. So he's great to watch because he'll play his style all the time. You know, and if we look at the men's French Open final against Djokovic versus Casper Ruud, we saw that really on display in that first set tiebreaker. You know, and that was when Djokovic was on that streak of tiebreakers with no unforced errors. and he didn't do anything differently, but he maybe hit his shots with a little bit more force. Like the first point, he's able to move into a forehand, hits it at a little bit of an angle, but it was more or less down the line and paints the baseline with that shot. And he hadn't hit a good shot like that almost the entire set. And here it is, it's the tiebreaker, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, that's Novak. That's what he does. And that was not him getting out of his game. That was actually him, I think, locking into his game even more and trusting it more. And he went on, of course, to win that match. So I think the goal is to understand your best level of play and to try to play it all the time. But of course, you must recognize what are the situations that have kind of pulled you out of it? What are the stressors in a match that have made you lose the discipline around your game? And maybe that leads to a loss. Maybe that's part of the losing, is the inability to play that game all the time. And so I was talking to a player about this yesterday, because he's really struggling with closing sets and he's losing matches because he can't close sets. And so we discussed this concept of knowing what his A game is and let's go try it. And I said, you know, let's have the experience. Let's experiment with this, because really, what do you have to lose? You're already losing, right? You already feel terrible. So can it even get worse? I don't think so. So let's try this and just see what happens. And so we discussed that. We built in some script reminders that he could put on the side of the court when he reaches a situation like this. Really more to prompt him to try to have the experience, more than anything, to try to build some belief and trust in what he's doing. Because he's doing a lot of great things. You know, when I was in the software development and testing world, we often talked about projects. The first 85% was easy. The last 15% to finish it off was really hard to get it done. And I think you can look at a tennis match the same way. It might be not easy to get to, say, 5-2 or 5-4. But boy, getting from 5-4 to 6-4 is hard, right? Or just to the end of the set. And it's in that moment where you need to trust yourself even more to build that belief. And I think that it's just another way of looking at what's going on. All those other things about loss aversion and getting excited, I think that's part of it. But I think it's really learning to trust yourself and trust your game and believe in your ability to compete in that moment that can get you over the hump and maybe get this to be more consistent. Because then we can really say, Josh, yes, you're doing all the right things.
Definitely, definitely. And I think that, you know, the trust or the belief piece is, you know, those are some of the right, you know, those are some of the biggest right things to be doing, right? So if without those things, and you know, without those pieces, with only some of the other tools, you're not necessarily doing all the right things, you know. So I think when we think about making sure our process is right, you know, we need to make sure that we are focusing on some of these different angles, right? The physical piece, the mental piece, our habits, our lifestyle. You know, are we doing everything in the quote unquote right way? You know, I think also sometimes when we feel like our game is at a certain level and maybe the results haven't caught up yet, I think it's sometimes our expectations and our framing that can get in our way, right? Maybe we can expect that losing will continue. We can expect that no matter how hard we work, nothing's going to change. So we're framing the situation in a certain way, which leads to, you know, more pessimistic expectations. And then that's getting in our way. So then all of a sudden we're not doing everything in our control, right? We're not, our attitude, our mindset is, you know, has these almost holes in it that are maybe, you know, causing or one of the factors for why, you know, why things haven't changed or why maybe you feel stuck. And I think it's, you know, I going back to something that you said earlier, Brian, I would say that I agree, but I think it also depends a little bit on what you were saying in terms, at least from my perspective, in terms of a player's game style. I mean, I agree that you want to be playing your A game and finding a way to bring out that A game, but there might be certain days where that A game just isn't working and you just don't seem to have that A game. And you can try to find it or try to find that maybe A minus game, but you know, I think there's also value in making adjustments and problem solving and doing something differently. That doesn't mean we're going from a serve and volley game to a moon ball game, right? That's going from an A game to the exact opposite of that for most players that play in that, you know, aggressive serve and volley style. But I think the ability to problem solve, to adjust, to make adjustments and sabotage our opponent and figure it out when we're out there is a great tool. That definitely, I do find sometimes that happens maybe a little bit too soon, where maybe we're two or three games in, a player is struggling with their consistency, and they maybe go to that B game or that C game too soon. They don't give themselves that time to work their way into a match, to trust their best style of play, and they abandon it too quickly. So I think instead of that, you know, we want to give ourselves that time, but at a certain point, you know, if it's not working, I think we do want to make adjustments and, you know, and see what we can change as long as it's within the realm of our broader playing style.
Yeah, and I know we've discussed that before, and I think we have, you know, maybe slightly different takes on that, but I agree with basically what you said. I think players do change, and it's part of what we're seeing here, or what we're referring to is they're changing quickly because they don't trust their games enough.
Yeah.
Right, to come back online. And, you know, the word that may be associated with that is they panic. And they don't know what to do. Oh, things aren't working. And instead of trying to kind of settle themselves down and make themselves feel better, they start making other adjustments that generally don't work and also lead to losing. And like you said, now you've stopped doing the right things. Now you've stopped doing everything within your control. You brought up pessimism. I actually think we could do a whole episode on pessimism versus optimism and why. And I think that would actually be also valuable. So I think the other thing, maybe to assure people or maybe encourage people about this, is that even though we point to players like Novak Djokovic and Iga Świątek and Chris Eubanks is really a good example of this, is that nobody starts with 100% trust and belief in their games. They've all had their own journeys. And some players reach it later than others, such as Chris Eubanks. I think Jessica Pegula is a player who is come into her own later in her career. And she obviously still has more room to grow, especially in her Grand Slam, you know, her major results. I think of from the 90s, Patrick Rafter really didn't find his game until maybe 26. So the idea here is that continue to work, continue to experiment, continue to learn. Because now, we're all, you know, most of us who are listening to this are not necessarily professional players, but remember when David Samuel was on, he's Liam Brody's coach, and he made this comment, Josh, that I found interesting and maybe is connected to this, but he said that he saw a number of players quit the tour just when he thought they were going to make a breakthrough. I really think this is about that lag. Like, they're doing all these great things and then they're not getting the results and then they quit. And it shows that perhaps too much of our evaluation of what is going on is based on the results. Because if those people had been winning, they wouldn't have quit. I think it's fair to say, right? So losing was playing a big part. Even though an outsider like David saw them doing a lot of good things, they quit. And so is this about experience and experimentation and learning, or is it just about winning? And I think everybody has to ask themselves that. You made that mention earlier. Everything is practice. If this can always be about building on these experiences, then let's go out and try to have these experiences and try to make that more of a priority. Try to make the learning and experimentation more of a priority. And I think you'll close the gap between a little bit. I mean, there's always going to be a gap between behaviors and results. But you may be able to bridge that gap more quickly than, say, others who are just overly focused on the winning and the losing and really aren't examining what's happening within the performance and really experimenting and experiencing new ways of performing that then they're able to build trust and belief in their process.
Definitely, definitely. I think going back to when you were talking about players maybe panicking, and I think this fits into the everything is practice idea. I think if we can really embrace our process and embrace sort of a longer term approach and understand that each match is not the end of the world, but it is simply a milestone. It's simply a test or quiz, and it's setting us up for that next match and that next match. And, you know, this, it's not the end of the road. I think when we can put tennis matches into perspective in that way, the stakes feel a little lower. It doesn't feel like, you know, okay, if I lose this match, then, you know, the catastrophizing. The catastrophizing doesn't happen in the same sort of way. And I think what it allows players to do is to go for their shots, go for their games. And the worst thing that can happen is you lose. And that's going to happen plenty. You've lost before. You will lose. If you're playing competitive tennis, you've lost before. You will lose again. Sorry to tell you. But it's, you know, I think it almost normalizes the experience a little bit more. And can you judge yourself at the end of the match or grade yourself based on how did I compete today? How much did I trust my game? How much self-belief did I have? And can I judge myself in these areas rather than just judging myself based on a win or a loss? You know, can I prioritize those aspects of my performance and judge myself based on those? And and we're doing this in the effort of our game as a whole. It's in the effort of our long-term game, recognizing that, you know, by having those, you know, having self-belief, having trust in our game, by continuing to go for it, by maybe making adjustments if needed, but by, yeah, really figuring out what works for us, what we do best, and, you know, trying to do it whenever we can, understanding that long-term that leads to the types of results we want. And maybe in the short term, you know, that you lose a match and, you know, you're up 5-2 and you continue going for your shots and the set turns around. And that can happen sometimes too. And I, as we talked about earlier, I do think there is a certain place for adjustments in a situation. And I think we are on the same page there. But yeah, I think, you know, whether it's more long-term in terms of a player's career or more short term within a match, I think it really is the same idea of, you know, having a process. And I think that word process is thrown around a lot, but really figuring out what are the controllable factors that you need to play well, to play your game, to be successful. It doesn't mean you're going to be successful every time, but it means that long term it is a winning formula. And figuring that out, again, long-term or short-term, and really trying to have that trust, have that belief in it in order to see how far it can take you and not abandoning it too soon. I mean, I think about someone like Chris Eubanks. What if after year three or four of being, you know, sort of in that 150 to 220 range, he just decided to call it quits? You know, I think about people that maybe start a business, and 6 months later they're like, oh, this hasn't gained traction, and maybe they stop, or they start a new workout routine, and you know, a few weeks in or a few months in, maybe they're not seeing the results that they want, and they stop. They don't necessarily give themselves the time to break through. They're not trusting that the process is going to lead to the results. Eventually, they expect that the results will come sort of at that same time as their process. They expect that the results will be there at the same time when they think their level is at that same point. They don't, just recognizing that lag is there, not necessarily knowing how long of a lag it is, but recognizing that it's there and trusting that eventually you will get there, and having patience as well, I think is all key to eventually getting to that point.
And giving yourself credit for doing the workouts, eating right, all that stuff. You know, that's one thing where, like, BJ Fogg in his book, Tiny Habits, discusses the idea of celebrating yourself in a way when you do those right things, so that can possibly help you to maintain that in the, you know, in sort of in the midst of there's going to be a gap, right? But there were some things that you were saying there, Josh, that reminded me of Rafael Nadal's definition of personal satisfaction, because he's another guy you could say that does a good job of doing the right things throughout a match, and even in the big moments. He's not easy to beat, especially in certain, you know, especially in Grand Slam situations. So he has talked about this feeling of personal satisfaction coming from playing with the right attitude, playing with great effort, and having a feeling that you did everything you could to win the match. And, you know, that could involve a lot of different things. But he said that, you know, winning and losing, sometimes somebody's got to win, somebody's got to lose. But if you do those things, at least for him, he feels the same whether he won or lost. He has that personal satisfaction because he feels like he did everything he could to try to create the result. And yeah, some of the matches that we play, they come down to maybe a couple of games in a third set, maybe a tiebreaker. Because you lose that tiebreaker, does that mean you're the worst, you know, worst of the two players, or your doubles team is the worst of the two teams? No, it's one game. Anybody can win one game. So, but did you do all the right things in your power to try to win that game? Did you have the right attitude? Did you give your best effort? Do you feel like you did everything you could? At a certain level, that has to be how you feel about the match later. Because if you keep doing that, keep getting in those situations, you will start to see results. And that's why I think guys like Nadal, Federer, Djokovic have had such sustained success, because they have a good sense of how to do their thing, how to give their full effort all the time, and they have their full belief, and they've realized those results because of that. And I think when we look at other players, when they've played that big three, much of what has gotten in their way is this lack of trust and belief in themselves in pressure moments against those guys. Bit of locker room power there too, you know, but that's an effect on your belief, right? And so right now Alcaraz seems to be immune to that to a certain degree. You know, he believes in himself and that enough. And so I do think, going back to this idea of personal satisfaction, because those are controllable things, Josh, is maybe a different way to look at your matches and then assess. Because if you don't feel personally satisfied about that, that gives you more to do than just, oh, I didn't win.
I think that's absolutely true. And I think, yeah, feeling like you did everything that you could, it leads to that satisfaction. Whether you're one of the top players in the world, whether you're a recreational player. And I think it really is, you know, you trying to put your best game out there, you know, day in, day out, you trying to feel like you're I guess maximizing your abilities in different aspects of the sport. You know, and it doesn't mean that you're going to be perfect. That definitely doesn't mean that you're going to be perfect. I think, as you said, we want to give ourselves credit. We want to, in certain ways, take some pressure off of ourselves to have to be perfect, to have to, you know, we look at other people and it's very easy to compare ourselves and say, okay, this person's doing this, this person's this UTR, why aren't I? You know, this person won this tournament, why can't I do that? But instead of that, can we give ourselves credit for how far we've come? Can we, you know, just really try to trust that by, you know, and I think we can focus on certain improvements that we've made with our process. Okay. You know, I was, let's say, for an example, the in-between point routine. Somebody who started, you know, by using the in-between point routine 30, 40% of the time, and they've gotten up to 70, 80, 90% of the time. Now, does that directly lead to more wins? I think over time, yes. But in the moment, does that mean that by making that one change, you're going to win more right away? No, no, it doesn't. But, you know, the effect of that, the byproduct of having an in-between point routine, is that you're able to reset more. You're able to put one point behind you more and really fully focus on and really have a clear intention for what you want to do in the next point. And that helps so that you have fewer points where you're not fully focused, fully present, fully ready to go. And, you know, over time, that tends to lead to better results. Again, these are small changes, right? So a change like that, you know, will lead to more points that you win over time. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm now using my routine more consistently this next tournament. Now I think I am going to do great in this next tournament because I'm using that. It's not necessarily that linear. So just, you know, understanding that these changes have more of a long-term benefit, and sometimes it's short-term benefit, but sometimes that takes some time. And I think recognizing the dynamics of making change, you know, changing habits, changing behaviors, making improvements, recognizing that can take some time, I think helps a player, you know, enjoy that process a little bit more, because we can start to, you know, see the improvements along the way, see the small changes, and have that trust that, okay, over time, this leads to the types of results that I want. I just might have to wait a little bit longer than I want to.
Yeah. And then try not to get tricked into abandoning that something like a between point routine, because it's not delivering immediately. Well, I tried that and it didn't work. Right. And that's something I think you've probably heard, or something that have suggested or training players on. It didn't work immediately, therefore it's out. So it's like we're abandoning doing the right thing for really not a great reason. You haven't given it enough, or you haven't believed in it enough to get you there. So I think it's been a fascinating discussion, Josh. I don't know if you have any last thoughts before we wrap this up.
No, I mean, I think we've talked about, you know, a lot of important pieces here. I mean, I think, you know, players can think about their own games. People can think about some of the journeys of, you know, other tennis players around them, can look at professional tennis players, you know, other professional athletes, and recognize, you know, there's just so many examples in sport of athletes who maybe lagged behind in certain ways, right? I mean, Tom Brady is often brought up as an example. You know, Michael Jordan, you know, was cut from his high school team. All athletes go through their ups and downs. And you know, sometimes it is those, you know, ups and downs that lead to that sort of period of rapid growth, as we've seen with Chris Eubanks. I know we brought up the bamboo example, where it's like, no, you know, the bamboo is building this strong foundation under the ground, and you can't see it. And then all of a sudden, after what, 5 years, you know, after a number of years, something like that, all of a sudden it just shoots out. And you know, that can happen. It doesn't exactly look the same for everybody, but I think it's a very common occurrence that, you know, it takes time, you're watering that bamboo, you're sticking with that process, you're trusting it, and then eventually there is that breakthrough. And, you know, I think we only get to that point if we have the patience, if we have the perseverance to let us get to that point. And if we abandon it too soon, whether that's in a match or abandoning our game plan, our playing style too soon, whether that's our, you know, new skills that we're adding, like the in-between point routine, like our breathing, like our preparation. You know, if we abandon these tools too soon, we don't necessarily give ourselves the chance to break through in the way that we want to.
So I think points of emphasis coming out of this would be learn to experience these things, experiment, and really prioritize the learning in situations, in matches in which maybe you're struggling or feeling stress, and just learn to trust yourself more, trust your process more. It will end up delivering for you the more that you put into that and the more that you continue with these great, great behaviors. And but that's the tricky part, is the sport's constantly getting you to break your discipline and maybe quit. So can you persist and persevere through all the difficulties? That's, tennis is so challenging because of that, right? So that's our show for today. Thank you all for listening. For more on today's episode, please check out the show notes. If you have any feedback or questions for me and Josh, please email us at tennisiqpodcast@gmail.com. Additionally, if you have some time, please rate and review the podcast so others can find it. Also, please subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice, including YouTube, so you can be notified of new episodes. You can also check us out on Instagram. If you would like to support the podcast, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership, where you can learn about the benefits of being part of the Tennis IQ podcast community. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon in our next episode.